Now, here is an exclusive interview by Michael Toms with Shakti Gawain.
Hi, Shakti.
Hi.
So, you've read Conversations with God. This is a book it's similar to other books that have appeared. I mean, it's not the same thing, obviously, but there's a lot of books that have been published in recent years. I think of The Celestine Prophecy, Mutant Message, books like Care of the Soul and others that deal with spirituality and enriching our spiritual life. Why do you think that's happening right now? Because it seems like they're coming in abundance.
Oh, gosh. I mean, to me, it's been happening for quite some time. So, you know, I've been pretty tuned in to the kinds of ideas and books that have been coming out for about 25 years now. So I guess it's true that it's reaching more and more people and reaching into the mainstream and reaching the masses much more. I think that's just because the evolution of consciousness is getting to the point where it's really more and more people are finding the necessity to tune into these kinds of ideas.
Do you have conversations with God, Shakti?
Well, I don't think of it that way because I wasn't brought up in any kind of Christian or even any kind of organized religion at all, although my family did have some religious roots. But I don't relate that much to the word God or the image of God as a person, as a man or whatever. So I don't think of it that way. But in using other terms, yes, I do very much. And an awful lot of my own personal work and my own teaching has been about that precise thing, that we each have that connection inside of us to that higher intelligence and wisdom, and that we can access that within ourselves. So yes, I do. I do that on a regular basis and have for many years.
In the book, there's a lot of emphasis on paying attention to your feelings and going inside. And how do you see that from your own work with visualization and intuition? And how would you compare what you do with what God is saying here in this book?
Well, this particular God, the way he, she is expressing, is coming through with a pretty strong Christian orientation. Counteracting a lot of the misunderstandings and limitations in the way that people commonly practice and understand Christianity, and I think in a very wonderful way, actually, explaining what the real meaning of a lot of that is. There is an emphasis, to me, there's quite an emphasis on thoughts, how thoughts create our reality. And that's something that, of course, I explored a lot in my early books, Creative Visualization, Living in the Light, and it's been a foundation of my work. In recent years, I've moved a lot more into exploring what I call all four levels of our being, spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. And I think there's a lot of necessity and a lot of importance to deal with the emotional level as well as the mental level. And in this book, there's a kind of more of an emphasis on the mental. As I find in most kind of traditional spiritual books, it talks a lot more about the spiritual and the mental. And yes, it does make reference in passing kind of to our emotions and how important they are and how we need to accept them. But it doesn't really tell very much about how do we really do that. And what I find is that that's the stumbling block for most people, is the level of deep emotional healing. We don't know much about how to do that. We don't have very many role models. So my work has probably more emphasis on doing the emotional healing and really bringing it into the physical. But I have to say that one of the reasons I like this book is because most of what's being said in this book is almost word for word, concept for concept, things I've said in my own books, from Creative Visualization through Living in the Light to Path of Transformation.
So you believe that thought basically determines our reality, what we think and how we perceive?
I think that certainly what we think and how we perceive is a large part of what creates our experience of reality. I think what we feel, our emotions and our emotional patterns, are a big part of that too, and they're different from our thoughts. And most people don't differentiate that. Most people just talk about thoughts and how our thoughts create a reality and talk about how we have to change our thoughts. But I don't find that most people in the spiritual traditions talk much about the deep emotions and feelings and emotional patterns we have. And it's a very different thing to deal with those. You have to deal with them in a different way. You can't just change your emotions. You have to really experience and embrace your emotions. And when you think about it, emotions happen to us a lot earlier in life than thoughts do. I mean, we feel for months at least, if not years, before we begin to form those feelings into thoughts. So it's in some ways a deeper level, I feel. But yes, we do. Our thoughts have a lot to do with creating our reality.
You've also, your work has taken you into relationships. You've written mm-hmm. about relationship.
And, yeah.
And there's a quote in the book that I'd like to bring out right now. Relationships are sacred because they provide life's grandest opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, it's only opportunity to create and produce the experience of your highest conceptualization of self.
Absolutely.
You agree with that?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I do workshops all the time about how relationship is our best path of consciousness. It's our most relentless reflection. We can count on our intimate relationships to always be reflecting to us what our growth is, what our next level of healing and learning and growing is. And I do believe that the purpose of relationship is to help us develop our greatest potential. And they're very effective at that if we know how to use them. Most of us don't really know how to use them that way. So I appreciated what he had to say about relationship.
There's a large focus in this book on love, and mm-hmm. love being the path.
Yeah, and as I read through the book, there were very few things I disagreed with. In fact, most of the things I went, yes, that's what I say too. There were a couple of places. One of the things I felt a little uncomfortable with is. See, I really believe that this is a plane of duality, of polarities, in which our task is to learn to truly honor and embrace all opposites, all polarities, that one isn't better than another, but that, in fact, all the aspects of life are equally valuable and blessed. And he says that over and over again in here, but then sometimes when he gives examples, it seems to have a different emphasis, like he's saying everything is either love or fear. And it's quite clear from the way he talks about that love is better. You know, yes, we need to, you know, accept fear and so forth, but what we really want to do is get to love. And to me, that still has that same underlying implication of one's higher, one's lower, one's better, one's worse, one's good, one's bad. It felt that way as I was reading it. And see, to me, fear is a way we characterize the emotional state of contraction. Love is the emotional state of expansion. We need both expansion and contraction in the physical world. If we just expanded all the time, you know, there would be no boundaries. There would be no individuation. That one isn't better than the other.
But somehow, perhaps you have to experience fear just like you have to experience suffering in order to understand the deep dimensions of life. And to understand love, you have
well,
to go
and there's
fear.
A purpose for fear in the physical world. I mean, we feel fear, valid fear, when there's danger, when we need to protect ourselves, when we need to pull back physically from something that's dangerous to us or emotionally. So I just, that was the only thing that I, you know, or one of the only things that I kind of reacted to. And I'm, there aren't very many other people I ever hear saying what I'm saying here. I mostly hear people saying this, that let's choose love. Let's let go of fear. Let's get rid of fear and choose love because love is the higher. And I know what they mean. I mean, it feels much better to love than to fear. Yet there, I don't know. I just think that there's a place for both and they're both appropriate. You know, my way of thinking of it is that on a spiritual level, love is what we are. Unconditional love is our experience on the spiritual level. And whenever we get the opportunity to touch into that level, we get that wonderful feeling of unconditional love. On a human level, unconditional love, it's not human. You know, on a human level, we have needs, we have vulnerabilities, we have to protect ourselves. We love and we need both. To have unconditional love, you have to have no needs. And on a human level, we do have needs. And I think being here one of the reasons we've chosen to come here is to explore this dimension of humanness, of vulnerability, of having needs, of having emotions, of not being so perfect and so self-sufficient. Am I making sense?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So, I don't know. I'm just kind of a champion for not in any way implying that the human aspect is less than the spiritual. But really, they're both incredibly beautiful. And we're here, I think, at this point in our evolution to try to bring them together and have this experience in physical bodies on the earth of being human and being divine.
How do you pray?
Well, I don't usually think of it as praying, again, because I don't come from that kind of orientation and that word was not something that I ever really related to. I think of it, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not a word that I particularly relate to. I meditate, and for me, meditation is really just sitting quietly and being with myself, with whatever's happening. If I happen to be in my mind with a lot of thoughts going on, just sort of allowing myself to be with that. And as I do that, often that starts to quiet down a little bit, and maybe I move into what I'm feeling emotionally, just becoming aware of that. And oftentimes then I can kind of drop down into what feels like a deeper place, a more core place, a more essence place, and just making contact with my own essence, which is also connected to the essence of life and God and, you know, greater intelligence, whatever you want to call it. And then I often just I just open to receiving if there's any reminder or message or something that I need to be aware of. Or if I have a question or a problem, I'll ask, you know, what do I need to know about this? Or what do I need to heal in this situation? And just pose the question, and if some kind of answer or insight comes to me, I take it. And oftentimes it doesn't right at that moment. But I know that by posing the question or asking for what I need, I'm creating the space for it to come to me either internally or oftentimes externally. So it's kind of a communion with that deeper wisdom that I feel is inside of me and in all of us.
There's something in the book that deals with prayer about that prayer really is not prayer that don't come in supplication, but come already mm-hmm. in gratitude
yes.
for what you already have.
Yeah, I think that's pretty powerful. I mean, I think come in any way that you want to,
yeah.
you know, come
mm-hmm.
however you feel to. Sometimes you feel like I need help, you know, or please, but that is kind of a disempowered place. And I think it's okay to be that way sometimes. It's like the universe can be our mother and father if that's what we need. But I agree that real powerful change and transformation comes from allowing yourself to really experience it the way you want it to be. And that's what my book, Creative Visualization, is really all about. And experiencing it with gratitude and appreciation. Yes. If you can muster that up, that's a good thing to do.
In Conversations with God, did you resonate with the voice of God here? Did you resonate with it? It sounds like you did. Sounds like you resonated a lot with it.
Yeah, I did. I mean, as I said, I feel like a lot of what was being said in maybe slightly different words are things that I find myself saying or that I've written a lot.
Also, another part of the conversation with God, there's this emphasis on living without expectation, mm-hmm. acting without thought of the results. I mean, not that we wouldn't mm-hmm. think of the results at some point before we act, but uh-huh. that we're moving through life really coming from the deepest part of ourselves, from our passion, and we're expressing our beingness through that.
Uh-huh. Well, I love the passion part, and I do feel that the more you live your passion and follow your desires and honor your feelings and express who you are, the more clear you become. I get a little anxious about See, again, it's a kind of a very traditional spiritual approach to say, you know, we need to live without expectation. That's wonderful. That's like being unconditionally loving and non-judgmental, and it's all a kind of a wonderful spiritual ideal. Everybody I know has a real hard time doing that.
That's right.
Including myself.
Yeah.
And those kinds of I mean, trying to live up to a spiritual ideal so often causes such a split in people. It puts us in conflict with ourselves. God, I want to be unconditionally loving and non-judgmental, but really, I feel that I've, you know, conditionally loving and judgmental a lot. What's wrong with me? Why can't I give this up? Why can't I be more like that? And there we are, judging ourselves, feeling bad about ourselves, feeling in conflict, which is the opposite of the way, you know, the teaching, what the teaching is supposed to help us with. So my feeling is that, again, everything, all polarities are true. It's wonderful to have times where we can let go of expectations. It really is an incredible freedom when we can do it. It's wonderful to have those moments of unconditional love. It's wonderful to have those times of non-judgment. It's great to be looking at our judgments and see, where do they come from? Why do I have this? Can I let go? What's underneath it, you know? But also to really love ourselves on the human side for the fact that we do have expectations. We do have judgments. It's all part of the human experience. And I think we can learn to work with them. I mean, ultimately, what he's saying is true. You can learn to work with them and work through them and let go more and more. But I don't know if it's a good idea to be trying to live up to that ideal, because that takes us out of our real experience.
Well, at times it just reminds me during the book, Conversation with God, that sometimes the author apologizes or says, oh, you know,
yeah.
And God says, don't worry about
yeah.
it. Forgive yourself. It's okay.
Uh-huh.
Move on. And so there's this mm-hmm. constant theme that comes through of forgiving yourself.
Yeah.
We need to forgive ourselves more often.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's hard to forgive yourself when you've got a spiritual ideal that says you're, you know, really. See, I do hear a little bit of this message in this book. And it's the only part that I don't really resonate with. And it's the part that I don't resonate with in most traditional spiritual writings or teachings from either the Eastern or the Western or the New Age tradition, where it's like it's all being said, yes, we must accept all of it and it's all wonderful. But at the same time, there seems to be this double message that's saying it's all wonderful, but this is better.
Mm-hmm.
If only we could be, you know, self-sufficient and non-judgmental and not have expectations, then that would be even better, you know. And that makes it hard to really accept fully what the human experience is.
There's another aspect that comes up in what you're saying, and that is that in conversations with God, God does say that, and kind of repeating what Jesus said in the Gospel of Thomas,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the later scriptures they found, the Nag Hammadi scriptures, where the kingdom, where is the kingdom, Lord? And he says, the kingdom's before you. It's right here before you.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And God in this conversation also says that that's true.
Yes. It's become quite clear to me in my own life experience that heaven and hell are definitely right here all the time. I mean, I experience myself sometimes as being in hell, you know, when I just feel miserable and I feel blocked and I'm in confusion and life just feels terrible. And I know at those moments, oh, this is what hell is all about. This is where the concept of hell came from. We create it. We experience it right here, right now, at certain times and in certain ways. And similarly, I have moments of feeling incredible bliss and everything's perfect and it's all this wonderful flow and it's just heaven. So, yeah, it seems very clear to me that those are both aspects of our experience.
Shakti, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.